Okay, let's just dive right in. Imagine this for a second. A parachute, fully deployed, but it's inside the B-17 as it's falling.
Wow, yeah.
Or you survive bailing out only to nearly land, like right in the sidecar of a motorcycle zooming past.
It sounds unbelievable, doesn't it?
It really does. And today we're taking a deep dive into exactly that kind of incredible firsthand story. It comes from the Military Tales YouTube channel, specifically episode 62, WWII Vet Reveals, My Daring Escape from Downed B-17.
And what's really great here is we're getting this directly from the source. You know, it's a transcript from the video, so we're hearing from Gerald W. L. himself, a World War II vet. He's
Exactly.
talking about being a B-17 co-pilot, having to bail out over enemy territory. I mean, it's just raw history.
It really is. And our mission, really, with this deep dive is to pull out the most compelling bits, the real insights from Gerald's account in episode 62. We want to give you a really vivid picture of what he went through.
Yeah, so we'll sort of walk you through this amazing story.
Let's start at the beginning, his path to becoming a co-pilot. Apparently, he dreamed of flying since he was just a kid.
Yeah, his sister even mentioned that in the account, didn't she?
Yeah.
How determined he was, even really young.
Yeah.
It sort of sets the scene for everything that happens later in, you know, episode 62.
Totally. And like a lot of guys back then, he really wanted to fly fighters, P-51s, the hot airplane at the time, as he put it. He even did the single engine training.
Right. But then, as we hear in episode 62, things took a turn. Fate, maybe, or, well, a couple of pounds on the scale.
That weight restriction, yeah, 140 pounds.
And he was what, 142?
Just over. So they reassigned him, co-pilot duty on B-17s out of Lincoln, Nebraska, because they were short on co-pilots.
It's such a specific detail, isn't it? That weight thing. Shows the sort of personal hurdles you faced.
And he even thought about getting his tonsils out just to make weight.
Which, ironically, as episode 62 points out, he wouldn't have even needed to do for the co-pilot role.
Right. But it seems like maybe his instructors saw something in him, you know? Maybe his personality was a better fit for the bomber crew anyway. He mentioned that story about fighter instructors flying under bridges.
Yes. That anecdote from episode 62, it really contrasts with the kind of teamwork you needed on a B-17, doesn't it?
Definitely. Maybe he was realizing that himself, that maybe the bomber crew was a better fit for him than being a lone wolf fighter pilot.
It's an interesting point how sometimes your own nature kind of guides you, even if you initially wanted something else. That definitely comes through in episode 62.
Okay, so episode 62 tells us he gets the co-pilot gig, joins a crew, does B-17 training in Oklahoma, then they fly a brand new B-17 over to
With
England.
stopovers, yeah, that
Yeah.
whole journey. And being stationed at an airfield in England, you can imagine the atmosphere. Gerald describes it in episode 62. These places were just buzzing with activity, but also, you know, danger.
His very first mission, according to episode 62, sounds almost anticlimactic compared to what came next. Aborted run, bad weather.
Had to drop their bombs without a target, right?
Yeah. Still risky, though. A reminder that even the uneventful missions weren't exactly safe.
No. Absolutely not. It shows how unpredictable it all was, which is a theme throughout his story in episode 62. But then comes the second mission. That's the one.
And get this, the pilot had just turned 20 the night before. They'd had a little celebration.
Oh, wow. Talk about timing.
And then they get this unexpected assignment. Fly a chaff mission, but with the lead 8th Air Force Group.
Okay, so chaff. And maybe explain that a bit for listeners who might not know.
You probably know this better.
Well, yeah, as Gerald mentions in episode 62, chaff was basically thin strips of aluminum, like metallic confetti almost.
Right.
They drop it to try and confuse enemy radar, create false signals, mess up the anti-aircraft targeting. But flying with the lid group.
Yeah, that put them right in the firing line, didn't it? As episode 62 makes clear, they took heavy fire, three engines out, the fourth one sputtering.
A catastrophic failure, really. They had no choice. Bail out. Around 5,000 feet, he says.
And here's another kicker from episode 62. They hadn't had proper parachute training yet, didn't even have the backpack chutes issued.
Just the chest packs. Imagine the stress, having to rely on that, maybe not fully prepped.
Yeah.
It underlines how dangerous and sometimes improvised survival was.
And he talks about the backpack chute just sort of hanging there on the back of the seat, Lefty, the pilot, making that quick call to bail while they still could, probably saved them.
Absolutely crucial timing.
But then the craziest moment from episode 62. He reaches down for his GI shoes, and suddenly there's this puff of silk right in his
The
face.
parachute deployed inside the plane.
Inside the falling plane, can you believe it?
Rod, just sheer terror, I imagine. But his reaction, wrapping his arms around it, still trying to get out. That's incredible presence of mind.
He said in episode 62 he was just so relieved when it finally, you know, properly deployed after he jumped clear, I bet.
Utterly overwhelming relief, yeah. Going from that chaos to suddenly silence. Floating down into enemy territory.
And the landing wasn't smooth either, according to episode 62. Comes down near a little river. And his first thought is, oh no, I'm going in the water.
Right, because he hadn't been trained for that part. How to handle the chute once you're down. Surviving the jump was just the first hurdle.
He describes pulling the lines, trying to steer away from the river, just figuring it out on the fly. Amazing adaptability.
And then, just as he avoids the river,
this motorcycle with a sidecar comes roaring along and he almost lands right in it.
It's almost comical, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
In a terrifying way. Just highlights the sheer randomness, the luck involved.
So much luck. He ends up landing on a steep bank. Chute gets caught in some pine trees, stops him just before he hits the ground hard.
Another close call avoided. But the danger wasn't over. Not by a long shot.
No. He hears German soldiers running through the woods nearby, dives behind a fallen tree. That quick thinking probably saved him from immediate capture right then.
Definitely. And then, as he mentions in episode 62, he hears artillery fire in the distance and thinks, okay, I'll head towards that, try to get back to the American lines across the Rhine.
Which turned out to be a bad idea. Poor guy didn't have the right info, but you see his determination, right? Just trying to survive, get back, shows how isolated you were down there.
Totally isolated. Yeah. And that night, crossing the stream in November.
Oh, that sounded miserable in episode 62. Freezing cold, dark. He drops a boot in the water.
Has to fish it out, gets completely soaked. Just brutal physical hardship. Mm-hmm. Trying to dry clothes in that weather.
Yeah, just basic survival. But then he figures something out, as he notes in episode 62. He learns that German people mostly live in villages, not scattered farms, so the woods were actually safer for travel.
A crucial piece of local knowledge.
Mm.
And then finding food after days. Frozen turnips, apples.
Must have tasted amazing, I bet.
Oh, absolutely. Any calories would have been vital. It shows the resourcefulness you needed.
Yeah.
Every little bit helped.
So then he finds this taller building in a small town, maybe a church or school, he thought, and hides in the basement for a couple of nights.
A bit of shelter, yeah.
Yeah.
But risky. And then, bam, discovered by two little kids.
Who screamed and ran, understandably. Imagine finding an American airman in your basement during the war.
Intense moment. But what happens next in episode 62 is really something else.
Right. These men approach, and he decides to show them his .45 pistol unloaded. And their reaction, it wasn't hostile, it was almost friendly.
It really challenges that simple us versus them picture, doesn't it? Shows the complexity, the individual human element, even in wartime.
Mm-hmm.
Acts of kindness, you know.
Yeah. They take him to what he thought was the mayor's house, give him coffee and toast.
Small comforts, but huge gestures in that context.
Then a soldier escorts him on this long walk to Westburg. About 4.5 miles, he says in episode 62. Probably on bare feet by then, or close to it.
Ouch. And that encounter with the young German soldier who just had to talk to him before taking to an office.
And the officer seeing his bare feet, the young soldier found it funny.
A bit of strange, dark humor in a really bad situation.
Mm-hmm.
But then being made to stand outside like some kind of exhibit.
Yeah.
That reinforces the reality. He's a prisoner.
Yeah, spectacle. But even then, more unexpected kindness, right? Kids trying out their few English words. An older brother who spoke perfect English.
And that middle-aged woman, also fluent in English, who stepped in and insisted he be allowed to sit down. Another moment of basic human decency shining through.
It's these moments in episode 62 that really stand out. People are people, even in war.
Absolutely. So from there, military personnel take over. He's put on a train heading towards Frankfurt.
And on the way, he mentions meeting some Frenchmen, prisoners maybe, or workers who were kind to him.
Another instance of that shared experience of hardship, maybe. A little bit of solidarity. Even the detail about the rats trying to get a sandwich in the cell. It paints a grim picture of the conditions.
Definitely. So he gets to Frankfurt, which was a collection point for POWs. Brief interrogation. And then on the train for Frankfurt, who does he run into?
His crew.
Yeah.
His pilot, navigator, bombardier. Fits.
Incredible. After everything, finding them again, what a boost that must have been.
Huge for morale, yeah.
Yeah.
And then, even more amazingly, he runs into close friends from training who'd also been shot down.
Wow. Finding your buddies in a POW camp, that shared experience must have been intense.
And they all end up in Stalag Luft 3, North Compound 3, Air Force Officers Camp. About 9,000 guys there, he said in episode 62. some even from Dunkirk.
And the timing again, he was captured around November 30th, just weeks before the Battle of the Bulge kicked off.
Life in the camp, as he described it in episode 62. Well, for officers, it was limited activity, no work details, just winning.
It's a liberation by the Russians.
Right. He mentioned friendly interactions with them.
Yeah.
And seeing them driving American trucks.
A little bit of Lend-Lease history right there. And then flying back to England in B-17s.
Talk about full circle. Flying back in the same type of plane he jumped out of.
Amazing. The trip home on the troop ship took forever, apparently. Engine trouble.
Just one more delay after all that. But then, back home, applies for a job at Oak Ridge. Hired on the spot, things start looking up.
And then the personal side, reconnecting with his childhood sweetheart, M. Tinker. All those family connections.
Even had to win her back from another boyfriend.
Yeah.
Shows his persistence again.
Yeah. And needing to get married quickly for housing in Oak Ridge, that's such a post-war reality detail from episode 62. Buying that used 40 Chevy from his uncle.
Getting married, starting life in those basic starter homes in Oak Ridge.
Yeah.
Coal stove, simple windows. He probably compared it to the POW camp.
Wouldn't surprise me. But then moving up, bigger family, better house, eventually building their own place in Kingston. A return to normalcy.
And his career kept going, too. Transferred to the Air Force when it became its own branch, stayed in the reserves.
Right. And that civilian career path. Starting teaching sheet metal and drafting, then getting moved into engineering at K-25 in Oak Ridge.
All because, as he joked in episode 62, they figured if he could fly a B-17, he could learn engineering.
Huh. Love that. Shows how those wartime skills translated, maybe unexpectedly. He became a civil engineer, took correspondence courses.
And kept rising in the reserves, too. Retired as a major at 70. Still sharp, too, based on that story from the Air Force anniversary event in Knoxville he mentioned in episode 62. Oldest guy there, full of energy.
Truly inspiring. And he stayed connected to that past. The reunion with fellow POWs in 88. That book project where only he submitted his story.
He wanted that history preserved, clearly. But the most amazing connection has to be the great-grandson story.
Oh, yeah, from episode 62. The exchange trip to Germany, finding the exact landing spot with help from a local historian.
That just sends chills down your spine, doesn't it? The letter from the German boy's father thanking veterans, seeing the photo of the landing site.
Compared to his own memory from decades before, and that jacket he wore through it all.
It's just such a complete journey we get from episode 62. Young kid dreaming of flying, the terror of war, survival against the odds, captivity, and then building this whole long, successful life afterwards.
Incredible resilience. And those moments, the parachute inside the plane, the near miss with the motorcycle, the kindness from German civilians, the career shift.
Yeah.
Those are the things that really make his story, as told in episode 62, so memorable.
Yeah, what stands out is just his sheer grit.
Yeah.
You know, his adaptability and those moments of humanity he found. It's all there in his account.
It makes you think, doesn't it, about how people get through things you can barely imagine, how personal dreams get caught up in huge historical events. Gerald's story from episode 62, it's just such a powerful look at survival, the human spirit, what war really means long after it's over, what other stories like this are out there, you know, with their own surprises.
That's a great thought to end on. Well, thank you for joining us for this deep dive into Gerald W.L.'s story, straight from Military Tales, episode 62. It really is a privilege getting to explore accounts like this.